Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Perceptive Podcast. I am Josh Beiser, the owner of GameWisdom. Tonight, our topic is going to be casual games and the market itself. This has been something that we've been talking about on previous casts and something that we've been looking at in terms of how the market is doing. And to help me, my guest tonight is the owner of the Binary family and the recent keynote speaker at the Casual Connect Europe conference. Please welcome to the podcast, Thorsten Rosser.
Good evening. How are you doing?
I am doing well, Thorsten. It's great to meet you.
Thank you so much.
I know you're very busy, especially after the Casual Connect conference, and we have a lot to talk about, so this should be a very interesting podcast. To get things started, for people who may not have heard of you and the Binary family, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Sure, absolutely. I've been creating casual games for more than 25 years. So I started when I was like 16, early age, on a Commodore Amiga, and went through it all the way. I started off with doing games for advertising clients like the Kellogg Company, like Sony. It was on discs back then. The discs were freely copyable. And then we moved to several internet startups that was included K10 and Internet Game Show Channel. And that was also like an online site for casual games. And when I say casual games, we're talking about little destructing simple games that are great past time, like Mahjong, like Solitaire, like Breakout. And if we look at casual games, the computer game industry did start with casual games. If you remember Pong, Pong, without question, was a casual game. Games like the Breakout games were casual games. Pac-Man, without question, was a casual game. And so casual games were, from the very beginning, the important part of the industry and still are.
Yeah.
As for myself, after doing advertising games and internet startups that used to be venture financed, I always have been a quite big fan of Apple. And when the iPhone came out, and especially the App Store was introduced, that was an awesome day for me, because finally it looked there would be a possibility for the developer to sell to the target audience without having any middleman for the first time in history right away. And since that day, we started to develop casual games for the iPhone first, later for the iPad. And since 2009, when we did Break Even, that's been a totally awesome job for me. The Binary family is not a well-known company. We definitely concentrate on niches, but it's important for us as well. So we do educated trivia games. Knowledge Trainer is a very big hit of us. We do solitaire games. We do crossword puzzles. We do IQ tests. And also we work on a weather app, which is called Beautiful Weather, our biggest project, which is entertaining but not a game.
Okay. And it's interesting you said you've been looking at and working in the casual game market for so long. You know, you mentioned Pong, which is a great example. And I think that's something that a lot of hardcore gamers or relatively new gamers may not either know or tend to forget, is that the industry really did start on very casual games, very simple engagement models. And that the stuff that probably most of my audience is used to, you know, the hardcore complicated titles, didn't come out until later on in the industry's lifeline.
That's very true. At some point in time, the casual industry was kind of pushed back quite a bit because everybody in the industry, and now we're talking about the 90s, thought, okay, a game has to be more complex and more complex and more complex tuned. It has to be higher priced. So at some point in the 90s, it was, I think, only Nintendo that really still created casual games. And not until the early 2000s, this industry became professional again, introducing companies like PopCap, like Big Fish, and others that created the whole market. As early as it was, as it is today, casual games is the biggest games market in the world in terms of audience reach.
And it's interesting that you mentioned that the difference between the 90s and the 1000s, because I would agree with you. The 90s was really capitalized by a lot of complicated titles. It's where we saw, for at least the PC market, a lot of what people consider to be like the top or the most memorable games, stuff like XCOM, Star Control, and other titles that were very complex. And then in over the last decade, we saw the industry became a lot more standardized. It became a lot more open to new fans. And as you said, Thorsten, that's when we saw the, the rise of PopCap, the rise of Big Fish, and trying to appeal back to that casual market or to the wider market as opposed to the hardcore slant.
Absolutely.
All right.
So, yeah.
Do you have anything else to say about that?
Well, basically, yeah. Like the casual games, a market has been pushed back in the 90s. We nowadays have a very similar situation. Mm-hmm. Good new casual games are very, very hard to find for the simple fact that they're not created anymore. Mm-hmm. And if we look at our industry today, so I'm kind of slowly leading over to the...
Yeah.
To the speech that I did on Casual Connect, if you, let's say, look at the top 15 top grossing iPhone apps, and we're talking about games, mm-hmm. At the moment, you will have a total number of 3 game principles. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about 3 games being in the top 15, and all they differ in is they have different characters. So mm-hmm. if we look at games where you have to build up your own world, we have the choice between Clash of Clan characters. They're cute. Then we have the Game of War people. They look a little bit more mm-hmm. Different. Then we have Heyday with a funky chicken. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, it's the same game that we have here. If we compete, if you only look at the top 10, we have Double Down Casino, Slotomania Free Video Slots, and we have the Big Fish Casino. So in the top 10, we have 3 slot machines. Mm-hmm. And then we have some Candy Crush Soda Saga, which is basically a game where you have to have 3 gems or anything comparable that you have to get in a row of one color, and that's it.
Yeah.
This is how the casual games industry looks today. And these are the games that make money. And even if we go down the top list further, we are more or less limited to 3 game principles dominating the industry, and one of them is the slot machine.
Yeah, and I just want to stop you for 1 second for our audience. For those of you listening who haven't heard of Thorsten's speech at Casual Connect, the choice quote that I think a lot of people have been mentioning is when you said that if we look at the casual games in 2015, what's out there is mostly crap. And that's what I think a lot of people were sort of alerted to what's been going on with the casual market from your keynote speech. And as you said, Thorsten, the market has really shriveled up in terms of unique games, in terms of what's really popular. I mean, when we look at the TV, when we look at what's being publicized, as I said, we see Candy Crush, we see Game of War, we see Heyday and all that. But it's becoming, or it has become, very hard for a developer to establish themselves with a unique game design or a unique game idea.
Exactly, and that's a very interesting story that happened there. Basically, the big problem that designers of unique games have is not that there's not an audience. Mm-hmm. The audience for casual games is bigger than ever.
Yeah,
there's more people with mobile devices. They would love to play. They're open to new ideas. But what happens at the moment, they cannot find great new content anymore. Because if you open any app store, your whole vision is full of blinking games yeah. that we can easily describe as crap, that is trying to manipulate you, which is for free, and will try to manipulate you in making as many in-app purchases as possible. Mm-hmm. These games make such an unbelievable amount of money
yeah.
that the makers of these games have every single financial possibility to push these games in your vision. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it's supported by Apple and Google. And great game developers don't have any chance to show the content that they have to the audience because, let's be frank, we're limited, of course, to websites and blogs like yours, like yeah. others, where people can be know about good content. But the other possibilities are it's either what you see on banner ads or it's what you see in the app stores when you search for something. And there, it's impossible to find great new indie games at the moment.
Yeah. Yep, and that's
so what happened.
Yep, go ahead.
So what happened that these games came into the vision? It started like quite a few years back with the people of Zynga that had a look at browser games and realized and how much money certain people spend on them. And they copied existing games with their own Farmville, and they started off making free games where people could pay. And I was at many of the conferences, and I started to meet more and more people with backgrounds in the casino industry. And I were like, so what are you doing here? And they're like, oh, we're monetizing because there's this new thing. And I say, well, is it like gambling? And they said, no, it's not gambling. It's gaming because you don't pay out any money. The people just pay in. So it's legal. It's fantastic. And unfortunately, these people were right.
Yep. And that's the thing that we've spoken to a lot of developers about. And as you said, Thorsten, that even though these games are very manipulative, they have very basic gameplay, they are, you know, earning money hand over fist. And it's becoming very hard for anyone to compete with it. As you just said, with Farmville, Candy Crush, and those titles, they've built up a huge amount of money and a huge amount of clout that if you're, you know, a new developer trying to break into the casual game market, it's going to be next to impossible to get your game on the front page compared to, you know, the latest thing from Candy Crush or the latest thing from Zynga and so on.
That is very true. That's a dilemma that we have with our industry at the moment. And for example, a normal game designer cannot afford to do marketing banner. At the moment, the prices for a new user, just for a download that somebody that would pay for you to download Heyday, the price they pay for it is between $2 and $3. Mm-hmm. So, and 97% of the people that download the game will, you know, just have a quick look at it and not even start playing. And then 3% of them will play. And then another tiny fraction, which is like 5% out of these 3%, will they actually spend money. Mm-hmm. And the thing works because they succeed in tricking a very, very tiny fraction of the audience to spend enormous amounts of money.
Yeah.
So the number of people that spend hundreds of dollars a month or thousands of dollars, one single person, one single game, is enormous. Only 1.5%, that's 1 in 650 players, contributes to more than 50% of the cash generated of these games. Mm-hmm. So it's clearly something that is driven by people that have a gambling addiction problem that cannot stop on purchasing more jewels and other fake currencies that we talk about. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, this dilemma and this amount of money that is out there totally makes it hard for ethical, good game developers to get their content in the eyesight of the audience.
Yeah.
And so in a quick word, our industry is fucked at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's something that we've been talking about on the podcast numerous times about, is the social market really sustainable? And as you said, Thorsten, the vast amount of money that's coming in is not being it's not coming in because someone's making a quality game. It's coming in because they're using these very exploitive, definitely gambling tactics and strategies to get people to spend that money. And it's a far cry from what we see in the PC or the indie market with developers going for the free-to-play design, but they're trying to have that value there. Stuff like League of Legends, Team Fortress, and so on. These are games that are free-to-play, and they have enormous value, but they're not targeting, you know, the 0.005, the whales that a lot of casual and social games are targeting these days.
That is true. There's absolutely epic free-to-play games. And the moment, when you create a game to give your audience a good time, to give them some challenging entertainment, then you're good. As long as you design a game to make people happy to entertain them, you're good. As soon as you start to design your game and to manipulate your audience in making in-app purchases by, you know, timing the pop-up to offer 10,000 joules for the special price of $3 because you did A and B testing, and at this point they're most likely to press that button, and you're not thinking about how to create a good game anymore, but how to make them press that button.
Yeah.
Then you left the ethical road, basically. And happy to know there is a lot of developers that try to do the and to walk down the ethical road, but also those they don't have the money to compete to pay $2 or $3 per download.
Yeah, and talking about the pricing, I have one other question I just want to quickly ask you, Thorsten, about the pricing behind these casual games. When we speak to a lot of our indie developers and those who make $15-$20 games on the PC, they've been struggling with trying to decide the pricing for when you move to the mobile side of things. Now, for you and your company, since you guys focus on mobile at the moment with your casual games, what is like your general pricing structure in terms of trying to get people to download and buy your games?
That's quite interesting, and it's quite in the last 5 years. It's been quite a rocky road, basically. Mm-hmm. In the first 2 years, we started off with paid games. Our biggest game that sold a few hundred thousand copies on the iPhone and the iPad, which is called Trivia Knowledge Trainer, mm-hmm. was a game that has been sold for $5. It's still on the market for a slightly lower price. Mm-hmm. And we've been making good money. And I believe, like, for a book, like for a movie, mm-hmm. if you pay for something up front and you know it's going to be good, that's the most frank business model that there's out there in the world. And we were doing really good with paid games. Mm-hmm. Even that, like in 2012, at the beginning of 2012, even the majority of the game revenue was starting to be made by in-app purchases. Mm-hmm. And what pushed us into making free versions of our paid games and give the people a trial before making them pay again was one thing that happened at Apple. Mm-hmm. So in spring of 2012, Apple bought a company called Chomp that was specializing in its own kind of app store kind of display and search algorithms. And a few months later, in the late spring of 2012, a new app store algorithm took over the search in the iTunes store where you buy your apps. Mm-hmm. So until that time, you could, let's say, look for arcade fighting game or a Sudoku game or a solitaire game or a spaceship arcade, whatever game, and you would find a healthy mix of games that would cost you $5, that would cost you 99 cents, that would cost you $3, and also free games. Mm-hmm. From one day to the other, literally, and I remember quite when I started sending emails to my contacts at Apple, all paid apps started to vanish from the search result. Mm-hmm. So by the end of the year 2012, a paid game could not be found through the app store search results again. It would only display free games. Mm-hmm. Because free games, of course, have a much higher number of downloads in total, and that became the most important thing and value for the App Store search, and it's still that way. So at the moment, you cannot make a paid game and be found in the App Store anymore. Yeah. The next thing that we did, and that was a quite good thing, by the way, Minecraft is one of the very, very few examples of a paid game that still makes a certain kind of revenue in the App Store. Mm-hmm. And there's not much left. So what we did is we got out with free versions of our games. People could play for a while, and then they could either buy packages of levels or quiz questions or buy the full version. And that worked for a while as well, and it does still work with us. And at the same time, the revenue we made from paid games was getting smaller, smaller, and smaller. Mm-hmm. In the course of the years 2013 and 14, which is last year, we had to discover that the App Store algorithm changed in other ways as well. So while in the early days, in the first 3 years of Apple's App Store, if you released a new app, the app would become visible to the people. And if the people would then download it, rate it good, and download it again, you had a chance to naturally make your way to the top 10 or at the top 5 off the App Store by just creating a good game, by not making any advertising campaigns or anything like that. Mm-hmm. That's a possibility they took from us. If you throw a new title in the App Store at the moment, there's nothing that will give you any visibility. You will be ranked a little bit higher in the search results. And let's say your E-Star arcade game will rank a little bit higher in the search results, let's say number 20, where nobody will see it, instead of number 200. Mm-hmm. But any single developer that I know that released games, and we're not only talking paid, but also free, in the last 2 years, had a very depressing experience, no matter how good the content was. Mm-hmm. For us, and that's something that, is just a fact. With no new games coming in the market, we still have a number of downloads of our free games. And what we eventually did a little bit over a year ago, we started to include Google Ads and other ad formats. And as of today, we make more money from Google with iOS-only games than we make from Apple. Unfortunately, advertising only works for very few game principles. Mm-hmm. And many, many great games are not optimized for advertising because it's not the sheer playing time. So a huge part of the creative potential of our industry at the moment is limited there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And you brought up the good point about discoverability, and that's a topic we could easily spend an hour or so on just of itself, and how hard it is for a developer to get noticed. As you said, the iOS store is flooded with games, and as you said, it was designed to put all the free-to-play titles and have them up front as opposed to paid games. And we're seeing a lot of trouble with even on like Steam and major digital platforms with that discoverability. And the problem, as you said, is if you're trying to make a game and you need to be on that front page, you know, the second that game disappears, it's out of sight, out of mind. No one's going to know about it other than your hardcore fans. And that's where advertising comes in. But then the problem, of course, then is how are you going to compete with a company like Zynga, like King, who have, you know, millions upon millions of dollars of advertising at their disposal to make sure that their game stays on the forefront of everybody's mind?
I was researching another article and I was just looking at the top 10 of like late 2013 and the top 10 of early 2015. And I saw the same games in terms of top grossing. So we saw Candy Crush, we saw Clash of Clans, and there's not much variety at the moment. Still, it's kind of a scam what we're talking about. So these games, they are fun to play. They are nicely made. It is fun to put three colored things in a row on whatever game principle you use. And it's fun to get little messages that tell you, you're awesome, fantastic, la, 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 la. And it is also nice to, you know, have colors and music. But at the same time, what these games mostly try to do is to manipulate you into not solving the level, but doing more payments. And if we look at the history of entertainment, and if you look at our society as humans, even every scam has an end. Mm-hmm. And the whole casual games industry at the moment is kind of a scam. And at some point, I'm pretty sure we must have lost half of our audience of casual mobile gamers compared to 3 years ago by now, because not everybody wants to play that crap that is out there. Yeah. So at the moment, I guess people are looking for other pastimes. They go back to their old web games. The few that they have access to Steam go for Steam, like many indie developers that I met at Casual Connect, by the way. Mm-hmm. They're kind of trying to, you know, find a good medium to reach their audience with interesting content, and it's not the app stores at the moment. So Steam is something that they're hoping for to make some money and to make some valuable business model here. Mm-hmm. And what I believe is going to happen, we're not going to play the same three slot machine, build your own world, three in a row game principles for the next 20 years. It's not going to happen. Yeah. This industry is going to implode.
Yeah.
I mean, I lived for most of my life, I lived in Europe, and we had this TV quiz shows where people would call in, and if they get through the line, they could win money, and they just made enormous amounts of money from the people that, you know, placed their calls. That was something that was so big 10 years ago in the UK, in the rest of Europe, that you couldn't switch on your TV and having this look at this scam, and by now it's totally gone. And then we had this ringtone advertisings and subscriptions that were around, you know, just trying to scam people into something they don't want. And to my knowledge, these things go. So I think we as ethical casual games developers, at some point, we have to keep the ball low. We have to wait a little bit. This industry is going to eat itself. This is a sinking ship.
Yeah. And that's a really good point you made, Thorsten, regarding that. It's something that we've been talking about as well on this podcast numerous times, that we've been sort of wondering, you know, when's the next big implosion of the game industry is going to happen, or where it's going to take place. And as you said, there's definitely this kind of perception that it may be happening with the casual and the mobile market. And as you said, these types of scams, these heavily monetized games, it's just not sustainable because there's not a fan base there. They're just going for, as we said, like the 0.005 whales and, you know, screw everyone else. But you can't really create a brand or a fan base with that type of game design.
It is true. It will go away. I have no clue how long it will take, but I have a pretty strong feeling that if we talk in a year from now, the situation will be a lot different and looking better for our industry.
Mm-hmm. All right. With that, let's move on to our next topic. I know we're moving along pretty quickly, but Thorsten's time is pretty limited, so we want to try as many points as we can. So the next part of our conversation about the casual game market is something that we talked about briefly a few minutes ago, and that is what makes good and bad casual game design. We brought up the names of PopCap and Big Fish earlier, and those two, I think, are really like two like the high marks for the casual game genre, especially PopCap when they weren't bought by EA. We saw a lot of great games come from PopCap that really managed to bridge themselves between a casual and core or hardcore market. I know hardcore friends of mine who just love Peggle, and I mean, I love Plants vs. Zombies. That's one of my all-time favorite games, and that was designed primarily for a casual game market. So, my next question for you, Thorsten, sort of elaborate on what you said a few minutes ago. What do you think constitutes good casual game design, and what constitutes bad casual game design?
Okay, let's repeat this. Let's go to the point. First of all, I totally agree to you. PopCap has probably been the most inspiring team that has been out there in the last 10 years. And unfortunately, their new employees, basically they still have a job, and some or the new bosses have told them to go the evil road. Mm-hmm. But before that, and before Plants vs. Zombie number 2, it was a great company. They started out with Bookworm and any other games, and they did Bejeweled as well. Tell me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, I think
And creating casual games from what PopCap did is not very different from what the makers of Pac-Man did. Mm-hmm. What they did, they had a business model. So with Pac-Man, you had an arcade that was somewhere in a place where you could throw your quarters in and you could play and you could pay for it and you could create a great game. And if it was a great addictive game, people would play for longer and they will put in more quarters. But still, it was about having fun and giving the people a good time for the money they spend.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing went over the consoles. And when the trial gaming came in the early 2000s, where you could play a game for 60 minutes. That's how the first PopCap games got sold. And then after 60 minutes playing the game, you could decide if you put $20 down and buy the game or not, and then have fun for weeks again. That was good game design because people were just thinking, okay, I have to be good enough to convert as many people as possible after 60 minutes of trial to play my game, then have a great time, and then tell their friends about it.
Yeah.
So the mission was to provide great entertainment. And since Zynga, which and the whole movement on the mobile game sector is now people that say, okay, a game is good if you can sustain that many players after that amount of time, and you have to have a bigger than 4% conversion, and the average return per active user has to exceed $45. And if you can make it $70, we will give you a bonus. And they don't give a shit about the game.
Yeah.
They just think about, okay, how much does a download cost? How much money can I have? Can I make? And can I buy a yacht with the money that I make? It's the whole industry is not about creating a good game at the moment.
Yeah, definitely.
And that makes a bad casual game. And I know a lot of people, and after my speech at Casual Connect, where it was quite clear to the people that they have bad karma jobs at the moment, and that they cannot go home as a game designer and be proud when they talk to their friends or their family about the job they do, because they manipulate poor people. It's this kind of mess that we are in at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's a really good point about the bad karma, because there, as we said a few minutes ago, regarding the perception of casual games. I mean, I know a lot of people, a lot of hardcore or core gamers who completely and utterly, you know, turn their face away from the casual game market for the reasons that you said, Thorsten, about how it has become so exploitive, how much the brand has been poisoned by these developers who are focusing on monetization as opposed to quality.
Yes, it is. It is a bad thing. Just one thing to your example with Plants vs. Zombies with PopCap. When they had to do the second part, and these poor people, you know, the designers of Plants vs. Zombies, the graphic artists, the level designers, they didn't want to make this a free-to-play game. They were just ordered to do it.
Yeah. And it, as we said, you know, the difference in quality between Plants vs. Zombies 1 and 2 is just completely polarizing. And this sort of goes back to what you said regarding how some games aren't, like, really good candidates for advertising. There are a lot of great game designs that just aren't meant to be free-to-play. I've spoken to developers like John Schaefer at Conifer Games, who's trying to make a very complicated strategy game, and he said that his game really could not work on a casual or free-to-play market. The design just cannot be broken down into these individual elements and be monetized. Because if you do that, then the entire game is just destroyed.
It is like that. It's a pity that people like him at the moment do not have a chance to make money. And for us and our casual games production, I flew to Cupertino because, you know, I love my job, and I had the chance to talk about it, to talk with one high Apple executive and at least get an idea on what their thinking is at the moment and where, how the situation is at the moment. When I flew back from Cupertino, we immediately stopped working on new games, and we haven't started since.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still having our existing content in the market, but I cannot not refusing to work with fake currencies or manipulation. I cannot have a business case at the moment, and that's a pity.
Yeah.
And, you know, the number of indie developers that made money last year with games is probably less than a dozen.
Mm-hmm.
And it used to be a few thousands 3 years ago.
Yeah. And as we said at the beginning of this cast, the casual game market has really been squared down to, like, these very simple genres. The Match 3, the Farmville-esque, and what was the third one? I'm sorry.
Slot machines.
The slot machines, of course.
Slot machines.
Yeah. And it's getting...
Yeah.
I was just going to say, and it's, as we said, it's just very hard to showcase something unique that can, you know, try and compete with them, because they're the ones that are making all the money.
Well, it's the competition is mostly for visibility.
Mm-hmm.
So if great casual games, like even one that can't be present through these things, if they get to the attention of the people, they're good. If you look, for example, at Apple, there's kind of two sides within the company. Mm-hmm. So there's the people that are responsible for featuring apps on the App Store. These people are definitely on our side. These are good people. They try to support indie gamers. They try to put, you know, feature indie games. And if you get featured, you get a few downloads. But as soon as you're not featured anymore, you rely on the App Store search. Mm-hmm. And this search algorithm is in the hands of people that are not the editorial team, obviously, as it seems to me. But it seems to be people that, you know, don't understand the market and basically killed this model. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Now, I know we're moving along pretty quickly, so... one of my final questions in regarding casual game design and making it work or making a great game. For people listening who are interested in seeing recent examples of great casual games or casual game developers, do you have any examples that someone could look at of what makes up a good casual game post PopCap and post Big Fish Games?
I'm just trying to think of the one name of this one game that was the one indie game that at least made the money, where you have to walk up the steps. If you can help me out there, real quick, which was also a short to play game. But to be quite honest, without these few examples, I don't know example. There's a few trivia games. Mm-hmm. Where you can basically buy yourself in. There's Trivia Crack, which is popular in the U.S. at the moment. I don't know about their in-app policy range, and I can see they work with virtual currencies as well, so they're evil as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know any great casual games at the moment. I'm sorry to say so.
Yeah.
That are good examples. I know that there is some out on Steam, and unfortunately, since I work in the Apple world, I haven't seen Steam and Steam games lately. There is a lot of great casual content. The Indie Showcase at the Casual Connect showed a lot of them, mm-hmm. but unfortunately, those games don't pay back the money that they cost the developers to make them. So it's very hard to get back to that. By the way, the one game that made some money that we talked about is Monument Valley.
Yeah.
And interesting enough, even that it was featured around the world, had some of the biggest media coverage, the amount of money that the makers made was not much higher in what they spend in the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I just heard a news piece about the Game of War developers. I mean, they're making like $1 million a day from that type of game. And it's insane when you start throwing out those numbers, like how much these games that are heavily monetized are making. And it just can become very discouraging to try and compete in that market space.
Well, if we talk about this game, we have to understand that Game of War is a casino game.
Yeah.
So if we talk about $1 million a game, $500,000 of that is going to be paid by one of 650 active players. So there's one poor soul that probably is not able to pay his medical bills, that for some reason is manipulated good enough to, you know, just to spend this fortune on this games, and this is crap. Even that, you know, this is a crap approach. To say something a little bit about this, and I talked about this TV call-in quiz shows, and I talked about the scams with the ringtone subscriptions. At some point, in both cases, at least here in Europe, people had the government regulating the scams, limiting the amounts of money that people could spend. Mm-hmm. And I hate to say that, but at the moment it looks like with Apple and Google, with their app stores behaving completely socially irresponsible, mm-hmm. In milking these poor people, that this might be the only way to go. To really save those gambling addicts and at the same time save our industry as well.
Yeah. All right. This has been a fascinating conversation, Thorsten. I would love to talk with you for like the next hour or so, but I know that you are very busy. So we're going to try to wrap things up with two final questions. So this next question is one that I'm very interested in, especially as someone who's interested in looking at design, looking at the market. And this has to do with essentially the perception of the market for casual games. It's something that we hear some people argue about in terms of, you know, what's a hardcore gamer, what's a casual gamer, stuff like that. And the question is, in your opinion, Thorsten, is there such a thing as casual genres or just a casual mindset that plays these games? And to expand on that for those listening, I've heard of people who play casual games pretty much as on par as a hardcore gamer. I know people who spent, you know, easily over 100 hours playing Farmville, Candy Crush, etc. But on the flip side of that, I would consider myself a casual fan of the MOBA genre, which is perhaps one of the hardest of the hardcore genres out there. So, what are your thoughts on that, Thorsten, in terms of the market or the perception of casual games?
I do understand that the casual games that we talk about at the moment that really try to keep the players hooked on the screen as long as possible, mm-hmm. with this manipulation, that people really do play hardcore and they do play a lot of hours. Mm-hmm. But if we look at the idea of a casual game is what you play if you want to relax a little bit and if you want to have some in-between time. So mm-hmm. a casual game, and it's always been like that, is not something that, you know, you have four bottles of Coke ready and the mm-hmm. pizza in the oven, and then you're ready for the next 6 hours. You're probably on your way to work. You're in the subway. The kids are out for a little while. You're about to go to bed and you just want to relax a little bit. Or if you want to have a little fun in between. Mm-hmm. So this is a casual game. And this is the idea of the casual game. And I think that's a very, very clear definition. And this category, as it is, without question, is there to stay. Mm-hmm. And definitely, the hardcore game is a much more bigger, sophisticated mission mm-hmm. that goes beyond this innocent pastime, especially if we look at the multiplayer factors where, mm-hmm. you know, form teams, make friends, and stay with them on long times. I think it's very, very easy and clearly separable.
Oh, yep, and I think that is a good point. I agree with you on that, Thorsten, that casual games are built around very quick engagement models. Like you said, something that you can do when you have like 4 or 5 minutes to kill, or you're waiting for the bus, etc. While a hardcore game is something that you sit down, you're going to commit, you know, an hour, 2, 3 hours to playing. And the mindset and the pacing for those games are just completely different.
Yeah.
Okay. With that, I have one final question for you, Thorsten, for today, and I would definitely love to have you back on because this has really been an interesting conversation. But my final question then, and this is sort of to, I guess, tie everything together, in terms of the future of the casual game market, you mentioned earlier in the cast that you, like a lot of us, feel that on its current path, the casual game market is set to really implode at some point and to bust. So, in your opinion, Thorsten, what do you think the future of the casual games market could be to sort of save the sinking ship or, you know, go a more ethical route?
Well, I think it's some kind of self-purification that this industry will go through or is already starting to go through. And do you know what? People are not stupid. Mm-hmm. They might be tricked for a while, but our general society, our human race, they're not stupid. And at some point, they get fed up with crap. And crap is what is out there. And, you know, you can look at other industries. So, for example, if you look at certain TV show genres where you could not see anything else, like the same kind of trashy talk shows and all that, you know, they come and go, but they go for thank God again. Mm-hmm. And then you have quality. So if you look at what people watch at the moment when they switch on their TV, they use their Apple TV or their smart TV and they watch Netflix. Like I'm happy to watch House of Cards, the third series at the moment, and I'm happily paying for it because I don't want crap. I don't want advertising. I want something stimulating. Mm-hmm. And if you look at Hollywood at the moment, you know, just like last year, 9 of 10 movies were either Marvel comics turned into movies or sequels of other blockbusting movies that had the same intellectual depth. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, it's a very different audience that goes to the cinema at the moment. And can you imagine, like, in 10 years, it will all be Batman 7 and Spider-Man 14? Mm. No, it will change again. Because people want quality. They adore quality. If you look at the book market, you know, there is as much free content available as possible if you want to look for free books on for your Kindle even. But you want something good. You want quality. You want to spend your free time with quality content. And I believe in humanity, and I believe in our audience, and I believe in our profession getting back and getting better and finding its way to reach the audience very soon again. And in a couple of years' time, you know, the free-to-pay people will be back at their casino jobs or whatever. And I think the industry, our industry future, is bright, and it has to go phases like it does go through at the moment.
Awesome. Great points. And I think that's a great sentiment to end on for this cast. And this has been a fantastic conversation, Thorsten. And again, I would love to keep to sit here and talk with you further, but I know that you're very busy. For those of you listening, Thorsten is in Cape Town, Africa right now, and we have like a 7-hour time difference. So we had to sort of align the plans to get our different schedules in order. So with that said, we're going to wrap things up for the cast. My final question for you, Thorsten, is do you have any final thoughts or anything you'd like to say to your fans listening to the podcast right now?
Well, if you're an indie developer, you know, just keep up the good spirits. Definitely hang on to Josh and what he has to tell about. I think Game Wisdom is a great site. We are very happy that we have people like him around. And once again, we just sometimes have to keep it low and wait for certain things to vanish. And this evil thing that we have in our industry again will vanish. And I'll hope to see you guys great games out soon and see them out on great platforms again soon.
Great points. And thank you for the plug, Thorsten. That was great. Okay. So with that said, we're going to wrap up this conversation for today, but I think this is something that we can definitely talk about in further podcasts because it's such an interesting conversation, and it's something that I know a lot of developers are interested in, especially with the mobile and indie divide and how developers are trying to bridge that gap either from going from mobile to PC or PC to mobile. But that right there is, you know, an hour-long conversation. So we better not start talking about that now. Again, Thorsten, it has been an absolute pleasure talking today. And as I said, please don't be a stranger. I would love to have you back on. Hopefully we can get our schedules to align again.
All right. Thank you so much, Josh. You have a great day. And I'll talk to you very soon.
Awesome. With that said, we're going to end the Perceptive Podcast for tonight. As always, if you'd like to support Game Wisdom, we have several options available. For guest pieces or being a future podcast guest, you can find information and links under Submissions Wanted. Especially if you are a developer and would like to participate in an upcoming roundtable discussion, you can definitely email me and I can add you to the applicants list. Also, be sure to check out our Patreon campaign to help secure monthly funding for the site. You can find that information under the Patreon banner on the front page. And also make sure to check out the Game Wisdom YouTube page and Twitch channel, where I will play usually nightly different games and talk about the design, such as roguelikes, strategy games, and others. You can find the Twitch channel under my username, that is GWBicer, and there will be a link to the YouTube page from there. Thanks again for listening to the cast tonight. Have a great rest of the week, and we will talk to you again next time. Take care, everybody.